Galway the cat arrived in Dave and Morley's life, as you might remember, courtesy of Dave's sister, Annie. Annie left Galway with Dave when she returned to Nova Scotia after she had lived in and around Boston for almost a decade. The cat, lean and beige, arrived with an ominous warning. "I don't like to say this out loud," warned Annie, "but whenever the cat's around, things seem to go wrong." Annie had named the cat Galway after the American poet Galway Connell, a gesture of affection for the poet's work. It didn't take long, however, for Dave to recognize that the cat, whether by coincidence or some quirk of destiny, had a poet's sensibility. Being shy to the point of muteness and failing in any real sense to make connections in her new family, she terrorized Arthur the dog, picked on Dave, and largely ignored Morley and Stephanie. Only Sam, then 9, now 10 years old, seemed able to meet Galway on equal ground. Galway had been living with Dave and Morley for maybe 2 years before she began to overgroom. Dave isn't sure when it began. It was 2 years ago in the middle of the winter when he first noticed she had licked the hair off both of her front paws. It was not long after when he noticed there were also bald spots on her hind legs. The vet suggested the sleepers. "Those little one-piece pajamas," he said, "the ones you put babies in. With the snaps. You cut out the legs and a bit at the back, you know, so..." Dave said, "You're kidding." The vet said, "It'll stop her licking." Sam thought Galway looked cute in the pajamas. "She looks like a monkey," he said. "I've always wanted a monkey." Galway thought otherwise and disappeared. She was somewhere in the house. She emptied her food dish during the night, and you could sense her shadowy presence, but no one saw her. "It makes you wonder," said Dave, "if there are other animals moving around the house you never see." Galway reappeared abruptly after a week. One evening, while Dave was watching television, he had the uneasy sense that someone was watching him. And when he looked up, there was Galway in her jammies, sitting on top of the bookshelves, staring at him with disdain. She was still around the next morning, but she didn't acknowledge anyone. And she started grooming again. She started with the little balls on Stephanie's bedspread. In 2 days, Galway licked Stephanie's bedspread flat. Then Morley got up in the middle of the night and went to the bathroom and caught Galway grooming her toothbrush. She didn't do that again. Instead, she moved on to Arthur, the dog. One afternoon, Dave came home and found Arthur splayed out on the floor with Galway perched on his back, grooming his ear. Arthur usually bounds to the front door whenever anyone comes up the walk. This time, Arthur looked up at Dave self-consciously, but instead of getting up to greet him, he sighed contentedly and dropped his head back to the floor. "I don't think she's necessarily crazy," said Dave. "Maybe not even neurotic. I think she's bored. I think she needs a challenge." And that's when Dave decided to toilet train the cat. If I'm going to take the time to teach her things, they might as well be useful things," he said. "And anyways, it's a skill that seems to dovetail with her interests." Dave had seen something on television about a cat who could use a toilet. Actually, what he had seen on television was a promo for an item about a toilet-trained cat. He hadn't seen the item itself, but he saw the cat sitting on the toilet, and he thought it couldn't be too hard to figure out how to do it. Like teaching any animal a new trick, the most important part would be to move slowly. The most important part would be patience. Dave decided he'd begin by moving Galway's litter box out of the kitchen and into the bathroom. He decided he'd do it in stages so he wouldn't upset her. He started by moving the box from the corner of the kitchen out into the hall. He set it at the bottom of the hall stairs. At dinner time, Galway wandered through the hall, stopped abruptly, and stared at the litter box for a full minute, and then slowly and deliberately walked into the kitchen and dumped on the floor where her box belonged. Staring deliberately at Dave while she did it. I was moving too fast, said Dave. I tried to take her too far, too fast. He brought the litter box back into the kitchen and placed it a couple of feet away from its original position in the corner. It took him 2 months to coax the box and Galway out of the kitchen, through the hall, up the stairs, and into the upstairs bathroom. By April, Galway was doing her business in the cardboard litter box in the bathroom right outside Dave and Morley's bedroom. The next step was lifting the box from the floor to the top of the toilet. If he could get Galway to use the box while it was perched on the toilet, Dave figured it would be nothing to cut a hole in the bottom and eventually get rid of it altogether. No more kitty litter, said Dave. This is actually going to work. He believed that. Not wanting to repeat his early mistake, Dave decided he'd move the box up to the level of the toilet seat by imperceptible degrees. Once he got it to the right level, he could slide it over and onto the toilet. He chose May the 1st for the beginning of the ascent. On May the 1st, he balanced the litter box on a couple of books and waited to see what would happen. What happened was Galway looked at her litter box and then dumped in the bathtub. You have to expect setbacks, said Dave, the optimist. Not in my bathtub, I don't, said Morley. But Dave kept at it. By mid-June, Galway had stopped grooming. By the end of the month, most of her hair had grown back. And to everyone's surprise, she was jumping, albeit resentfully, into her litter box, which by then Dave had perched on a stack of books beside the toilet at seat height. We're almost there, he said one night. 1st of June, I'm going to tie the box onto the seat. I didn't really believe we'd get this far. He sounded like a figure skating coach. When July began, Dave had the box resting on the toilet seat with a hole cut in the middle, and to everyone's amazement, who would have believed it? Galway was actually climbing into the box and doing her business through the hole. As much as possible, Dave would try to be there to flush as soon as she was done. A cat has an instinctive need to cover up her business. It seemed to be the least that he could do. He tried to impress this on everyone else, to be there to flush when he couldn't. And then what? Then one evening, they were downstairs having supper, and the upstairs toilet suddenly flushed, and everyone stopped eating, and they looked at each other, and Morley said, "Who was that?" And Dave said, "Sweet Jesus." And he dropped his cutlery and he lurched upstairs, and there was Galway standing in her litter box with her head at the hole, watching the water swirling around and around in the toilet below her. Who would have believed it? Dave was ecstatic. He was home free. He'd keep enlarging the hole and trimming the sides of the box until all that was left... He'd keep enlarging the hole and trimming the sides of the box until all that was left was a cardboard toilet seat cover. Eventually, he could do away with that, and then maybe he'd write a book. Get rich. And then out of the blue, disaster struck. It struck at 10 one night while Dave was watching the news on television. The toilet flushed, and Dave looked around. Morley was beside him. Sam was in his room. Stephanie was out. The small smile that was tugging at the corner of Dave's mouth widened, pride before the fall. As Dave sat in front of the television feeling prideful, a hideous shriek filled the house. A piercing shriek of desperation unlike anything Dave had heard in his life. A howling, yowling, wailing wall of terror. Morley reached over and gripped Dave's arm. The shriek was so horrifyingly loud that it lifted the hair off both of their necks. Dave thought, there's a maniac loose upstairs, hacking Sam apart with an axe. Except it sounded worse, worse than that, worse than murder. So desperately worse that it was no longer the sound of murder, it was murder itself, come to life on his second floor. Murder was in his house, and it sounded just like someone trying to flush a cat down the toilet. Dave said, "Oh my God." He pried Morley's hand free and he flew up the stairs. Sam, who was already up the stairs, was on his way down, his eyes as wide as saucers. "There's a huge sewer rat climbing out of the toilet," he said. And he pushed past his father and went right out the front door. Dave threw himself into the bathroom. He had to look twice to be sure it was Galway. The bottom of the cardboard litter box had given way just as the toilet had flushed. Galway had fallen into the toilet at its fullest. She had plugged the hole so the water in the bowl couldn't escape. She was drenched, her wet, matted hair pressed to her rat-thin body, the toilet slurping and sloshing and overflowing, Galway yowling and clinging to the rim of the bowl as the centrifugal force of the water slowly dragged her around. Dave watched her make one complete rotation. And then, without thinking, Dave reached out to pull her to safety. He had heard all the warnings about going near drowning people. He had missed the ones about drowning cats. When he reached out with his arms, Galway sunk her claws deeply into his wrists. And Dave screamed, and he flung the cat over his head. And the whiplash effect launched her the length of the hall. She landed in a soggy and pathetic pile of wet fur in front of Sam's bedroom door. Then she hit the ground running and they didn't see her for another week. Now, this, as I said, all happened last summer, the summer before the one we just come through. Dave put her litter box back in the kitchen and you would have thought she would have never ventured back into the bathroom again. Strangely, she did. She began flushing the toilet again in the autumn. She didn't use it, mind you. Wouldn't even get on the seat. She'd get onto the bathtub and then jump onto the sink, and from there she could reach over and with her front paw push the lever on the toilet tank and stare at the water as it went around and around. She always liked that part, said Dave. Now, this seemed harmless enough until Arthur started to get into the act. Arthur and the cat would get in the bathroom together, Galway would flush, and then Arthur would bark his approval. And then Galway started knocking things into the toilet before she flushed it. Bobby pins, toothpaste, bottles of nail polish, hairbrushes. They had the plumber in three times before they figured this out. Once they did, they cleared the top of the tank, and then Arthur began bringing her things. Dave caught Arthur mooching towards the bathroom with one of Sam's Warhammer figures concealed in his jowls. They began closing the bathroom door. For a few weeks, Galway sat and stared at the closed door in indignation. Sometimes in the middle of the night, she would sit there and yowl, but they didn't give in. And eventually she forgot about it, and so did everyone else. Which is why no one thought to tell Dave's cousin Brenda she should keep the upstairs bathroom door shut the one night she slept in the house alone this summer. Like Dave, Brenda comes from the small village of Upper Narrows in Cape Breton, and she came to Toronto for the first time ever this summer against her will. She wouldn't have come to Toronto on her own accord. Brenda gets nervous whenever she has to go to Halifax. But she won a return ticket in the Elks meat raffle. Third prize. Whenever Brenda thought about going to Toronto, she started to sweat. All the traffic and people pushing around you, you could get swallowed up in a city like that and never be heard of again. Brenda imagined there were people from Cape Breton who had gone to Toronto walking around aimlessly looking for a way home, too shy to ask directions. One night she was lying in bed worrying, tossing and turning and thinking of all the things that could go wrong when the worst of all possible thoughts occurred to her. She phoned her mother in a panic. What if I like it? She wouldn't have gone if she could have got out of it, but everyone knew she had won the ticket. She arrived at the end of July at 9 in the morning, exhausted from the effort it took to get the plane off the ground. Had no idea flying was so tiring. She arrived so exhausted that the next morning, a Saturday, when Dave and Morley said they had to deliver Sam to camp, Brenda said she'd stay at home alone. She wasn't crazy about the idea of being alone at night, but she wasn't crazy about getting back into a car either. The drive from the airport had been fearsome, cars and trucks hurtling at them from every direction. There were 18 lanes of traffic. She listened politely when Dave gave her directions to a neighborhood cafe. Yeah, sure. Like she was going to go out at night. As soon as everyone left, which was 2 in the afternoon, Brenda locked the doors, checked the windows, closed the curtains, and then she got out the little neighborhood map Dave had sketched for her, and she ripped it into pieces and flushed it down the toilet in case she lost her mind and was tempted to use it. She made her own supper, Kraft dinner, and she went to bed at 9 o'clock, which was really 10 o'clock her time. And she got up once to make sure the stove was off, and again to check the back door. And then she lay in the back bedroom with her eyes screwed shut and her fist clenched, following each police siren to see if it was heading her way. Monitoring the strange noises of the strange house. She fell into a restless half-sleep shortly after 11, and then she woke up with a start, her heart pounding, just after midnight when the toilet flushed. Brenda had read how some burglars leave unspeakable things behind them when they leave the scenes of their crime. She had never read about burglars who used the toilet before they began. Just her luck to get a weird one. She lay in bed motionless, everything clamped tight. Maybe he'd go away. Maybe he didn't know she was there. If he came into her room, she'd try and scare him away by snoring. The toilet flushed again. And suddenly she understood what was going on. Of course he knew she was there. This wasn't a burglar in the bathroom, it was a killer. He wasn't going to the toilet, he was sending her a message. He was going to kill and dismember her, and then he was going to flush her down the toilet. Brenda did the only sensible thing she could think of doing under the circumstances. She jumped out of bed, screwed her eyes shut, and leapt out the bedroom window. Dave's neighbor, Jim Schofield, who happened to be sitting in his backyard and saw it happen, said it was the most remarkable thing he ever saw in his life. I thought it was Morley, he said. I'm sitting there, and there's nothing, no noise or bang or anything, not a thing, and then all of a sudden, out she flew. Brenda landed on the roof of the gardening shed in Dave's backyard. She landed on her feet, like a cat, and she stood there in her nightie looking around. A few cuts on her arms, a big bruise on her shin, a sprained ankle, but nothing serious. Jim looked at her across the fence. They made eye contact. And then they both looked up at the same time at the broken window that she had sailed through. Galway standing there on the window ledge, flicking her tail at the moon. They looked back at each other again, Still, they haven't said a word here. And then Jim, who comes from the Annapolis Valley, said, "Nice night." Dave tells me he's talking about visiting Brenda in Cape Breton. And there's even talk of Brenda coming back at Christmas. Brenda's told everyone that Toronto wasn't so bad, that it's easy enough to meet people. As long as you go out at night. Thank you.